Hi, this is Tom Regan. I'm a licensed addiction counselor and certified grief counselor for Heartview Foundation in Bismarck. Welcome to Recovery Chronicles. This is a half-hour interview program that celebrates recovery from alcohol and drug addiction. And our guest today is Crystal Axvik, and she is a Heartview employee. She serves as a mental health counselor and family counselor. So welcome to the program, Crystal. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how and why you became a counselor.
Mm-hmm. Well, my background is more mental health, and I'm actually headed down the road of becoming an addiction counselor. I'm currently in the process of licensing.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. I've worked at Heartview now for 5 years, and in that time, one of my first duties when I started was, they said, Crystal, we're going to put you on the family programming piece, and that's going to be your baby. And so I've been doing that for 5 years. Prior to coming to Heartview, I've had different positions that I've held within the behavioral health community. I worked with homeless populations at Ruth Myers. I've also had a history of working in corrections, working at Center Incorporated, where I did just about everything there, including the chemical dependency, tech jobs, all the way up to the clinical oversight. So found, though, that no matter what area I tended to work in, addiction always seemed to be a part of behavioral health and vice versa, whether it was behavioral health and addiction. Education-wise, I hold a master's degree in community counseling from the University of Mary. Graduated in 2009 with the distinction of being the first graduating class of that master's program. So we were the guinea pigs for the program. It's since very much evolved and started to include the addiction piece as well. But when I graduated, it was with the intent of becoming a mental health counselor, and that's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And so describe your average day at Heartview, and maybe no day is average, but what might you do?
Absolutely, no day is average. And in fact, upon my employment interview, I in fact asked that question of our executive director or something similar. Tell me what a particular day is like, because I really had no history of I had never been to treatment myself. I don't have a history of addiction myself. So I didn't know what to expect in terms of what goes on in a treatment center. As I said, my history was all working with corrections, working with homeless population and behavioral health. So I guess my typical day, a lot depends on the patients. They really drive my schedule as far as if someone's in crisis, if someone is needing case management services, if someone's needing relocation services to Bismarck, they need to get out of an abusive relationship or a difficult relationship at home. They need to figure out where do I go? What can I do? How can someone help me find a new job, get back on my feet after going through X number of days of treatment. So it's largely patient led. And then also depending on the day of the week, you know, we try very hard to keep certain days reserved for family, and certain days are, these are your individual session days. Certain days are, this is when we do group therapy, but you just never know what you're going to encounter. And I'm lucky at Heartview. I get to do a rainbow of things. Family is one of my main duties, but I also get to lead some stress management groups, some anger management, just some basic mental health topics. I also do a lecture on social media safety and how social media and addiction can interplay and either be helpful or very hurtful to one's recovery.
Hmm. Pretty broad spectrum.
It is, absolutely.
Hard to get bored.
It is.
That kind of. Mm-hmm. So are you actually counseling families or family members in-house? I mean, and what I mean by that is the families of our patients.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. So every Monday and Tuesdays, we've designated as our family days. And family involvement in treatment, from what I've found, is very important, and one of the things that sets HeartView apart from many other treatment facilities. Another one of the things I do is the orientation with all the new patients. When a patient comes in, I'll go through their binder with them, and we'll talk about this is what family day is going to look like. And yes, you will have to do a family day. That is a requirement while you're here at treatment. I often get a lot of scared looks, yeah. and it's a difficult thing to think about. Oh, my family has to come in and talk to me about how I've hurt them and what I've done and how I've caused them pain. And so they're really hesitant a lot.
Yeah. So what is meant by family day, and how do family days work?
Mm-hmm. So typically what we'll do is we'll schedule a family day for towards the end of treatment. And number one question I often will get is, why do you wait till the end of treatment to bring family in? Wouldn't you want to do it right away? Couple different reasons for that. Number one is oftentimes our patients are just too sick and in withdrawal and uncomfortable, and they're coming into this new environment where they don't know anybody. So we want to give them some time to feel safe, to get acclimated, and to get well and to feel physically well before they can even start to address some of their other recovery issues. Second, it gives that time to learn the process and meet their group members, become comfortable with their group members, and sit in on other family days and participate in group in other ways before the family comes in.
Mm-hmm. Because family members actually go into the group therapy situation, correct?
Yeah. So on a typical family day, they would be scheduled for that particular day. They would get an invite in the mail from HeartView with a brief explanation of, please come and talk about why, or talk with your patient about recovery and learn a little bit in the process. And so on a daily or a typical family day, they will meet with me in the morning from about 8 until 10:30, where I often will spend that time basically getting them talking. A lot of it is spent getting to know the family, and really the overriding question that I ask is, what has hurt your heart about this? How has so-and-so's addiction affected you? The important distinction to make is we don't bring family into HeartView for family day to shame their patient or our patients. That's not the point. It's not the point to make them feel bad. They already feel bad enough as it is. They know they've made mistakes, but what they don't realize a lot of times is how they've affected other people. A lot of times those defenses are so ingrained that they truly believe, I never used in front of my children, therefore I could not have hurt my children. So it's very eye-opening for them to have family come in and to understand, this is how my actions affected.
And by the way, you're listening to Recovery Chronicles on KDAC Radio, and our guest today is Crystal Askvik from HeartView. She is the mental health counselor and family counselor at HeartView, and she's been there for 5 years. We hear again and again that addiction and or alcoholism is a family disease. And what's meant by that? I mean, and I guess you've covered some of it maybe. But.
You know, I bristle a little bit at that term, and it's a very common term, and it's very true. I think it's become very cliche, I think, is why I struggle with it. And because it's cliche, people struggle to take it seriously. But in terms of why is alcoholism, why is addiction a family disease? Because the family or support system or whoever it is that's living with the addict oftentimes get sick right alongside that person. So while they go down the rabbit hole of addiction and poor choices and difficulty, family members too go through their own journey of fear and sadness and anger and frustration and trying to understand this disease that is very difficult. It's very similar to, or no different, I guess, than having a chronic, lifelong diagnosis of a medical concern, you are affected as a family member, no matter what.
Sure. And another term we hear so much in the addiction business and when it comes to families is enabling. Mm-hmm. We say, well, stop enabling your loved one. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Enabling, that is a very common term, and it's one of those dirty words. You don't ever want to be the enabler, but yet I think every family has it, and we don't ever intend, or at least I haven't met the family yet that has wanted to enable and tried to enable. It's one of the symptoms of the disease that just tends to happen. I guess my definition, or I characterize it as doing something for someone that they could do themselves. You're enabling someone if they fall and you pick them up and carry them through the door. You're helping them, you're supporting them if they fall and you help them get up, dust them off, walk with them through the door because you know they're capable of walking through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think of, let's say they break the law. So if you're a parent, as an enabler, you might say, well, don't worry about it. We'll hire the best lawyer and we'll get you off, instead of letting them face the consequences because the occurrence happened because of their using, because of their substance abuse. And so that's the way I look at enabling.
And enabling is often done out of love and done because we think we're helping. And that's why when family is involved in Family Day, and that's why we encourage so much education on addiction.
Yeah. Or the classic, I just thought of another one, the classic case of the wife or husband calling in sick to their place of employment.
That is your classic definition of an enabler.
When they're just totally hungover. Or unable to go to work because of their use. So at Heartview and in all treatment programs, we're attempting to teach the addict what we call coping skills. And I know that's where you come in also. But I guess I'm asking you for a lot of definitions today. But what are coping skills?
I think we need to remember, particularly for those folks that don't struggle with addiction and don't understand that, is that that drug or that drink, whatever that drug of choice is, that becomes that person's way they celebrate, way they mourn, way that they cope or deal or handle any situation in life, whether it's a celebration, a happy occasion, or a sad occasion or negative occasion. So part of treatment, or a lot of treatment, is identifying different ways to deal with those feelings. How do I celebrate without alcohol? How do I cope with loss? How do I cope with a stressful day without being able to have a beer or smoke a joint?
Yeah, good explanation. And I know that you teach anger management.
I do.
At Heartview, as well as stress management. But could you give us a few tips? I mean, we all experience at least a little bit of anger almost every day. But what are some of the major components of managing anger?
Anger and stress are very similar, and a lot of times the coping, the effective coping skills for them can interchange. They can work. What works for stress often works for anger, and vice versa. What I found is when I do my stress management group, the most surprising takeaway often for our patients is they love meditation. I think we. Or at least I did prior to coming to Heartview and learning about mindfulness and meditation and what that is. I had this stereotypical view of, oh, that's real new agey stuff. That's not my thing. I'm not going to learn anything from that. But that isn't the case. Simply learning how to be mindful and deep breathing exercises and living in the moment and slowing down and being aware of your body's presence and how you're feeling goes a long way in easing some of those, some of those feelings of stress and anger. So meditation and breathing exercises are very popular. There's tons of apps out there on Apple, and you're just Googling easy guided meditation, easy meditation, deep breathing techniques. Those are always two good things to keep in mind, and easy things that we can do and learn.
I've used some meditation exercises right from YouTube there.
Yes.
You know, you just go to YouTube and once upon a time I was working with a brain injured patient, and that patient benefited from meditation exercises. So I did it right with along with that patient. I was at the supermarket not too long ago, and as we were standing in line, I saw a Time magazine publication on mindfulness.
Yes. Yep. I have that one.
I bought it, of course. Yes. Of course, I had to buy it, and I finished reading it just this week. But it's inside the. A very good publication. Inside the publication was probably, what, maybe 20 brief articles about how to practice mindfulness and some of the latest research on mindful. And the one I purchased before that was on happiness.
Oh, there you go. So, I have little ones at home. They're even teaching mindfulness in elementary school to kids.
Something? Yeah.
Yeah, breathing and calming down and, you know, putting your hand on your belly and just remembering how your breathing is. And that can be helpful.
Do you ever talk about counting to 10 when you're angry?
Yes.
I forget who it was, but I heard someone interviewed the other day and they said, forget about counting to 10. I have to count to 100.
It's always surprises me. It's always the easy things too. And it's not necessarily things you'd think of, but how simple a concept to step away and count to 10, or take some deep breaths, or gratitude. We talk a lot about gratitude. I know that's one of your favorite topics. And simply adding the behavior of writing 3 things I'm thankful for every day has shown to decrease stress and be helpful in recovery.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, let's explore. So I keep a gratitude journal, and I wrote in it this morning, and I usually number the page from 1 to 10, and I like spiral bound, you know, nice looking notepads. And I know you're a notepad a person, but numbering that page from 1 to 10, and then and I like doing it in the morning, you know, while I'm having morning coffee, and maybe I have the news on in the background. I mean, television news with the volume on low. And I'll write down 10 things. Sometimes I may write down 11 or 12 things, but and you can write down the same things that you that you might have written down. There's no rules,
right? And sometimes that's how you have to start. Sometimes you have those days that are it's difficult to think of what am I grateful for, and you have to get down to I'm grateful I woke up this morning. I'm grateful I can take the garbage out to the curb and I can walk on my own 2 feet. Yeah,
I mean. And at my age, I usually write down my health.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
Let's face it, and I'm 67, and I've had some health scares, you know, along the way. But I, as a person in long-term recovery, number one or two is my recovery. And then who knows? And then it varies from. Maybe I'll write down it's a holiday. I have the day off. Or I have some time on. And I did an exercise this morning. Actually, I did the morning lecture at Heartview, and someone wrote down dogs. And I said, yes, I often write down that I'm grateful for dogs. And you could certainly write down cats if you're a cat person. But, but you know, we have our own dog, and then we often take care of the dogs of our sons. So we often have 3 dogs. But 3 dogs. But anyway, I wanted to spend a little time on that because I think gratitude is just good. Is good for everyone.
A lot of times when our patients are coming to treatment, they're so down on themselves and they're in such a dark place. It's hard to be grateful for anything. It's hard to think of things they're grateful for.
Yeah.
And so we help them along the way and often through treatment, they evolve and find that, yes, I do have a lot to be grateful. And same goes for families. We have to remind families a lot of times, be grateful that this is where your child is, your husband, your spouse, whoever it is that's in treatment.
Sure.
Yeah, they're getting help.
Yeah. And oftentimes patients will say, well, Heartview.
Thankful for Heartview.
And during the summer, especially here, I'll certainly write down, I'm grateful for the weather. I'm a football fan. I might not name the team right now, but I mean, an NFL fan, but I might write down, well, there's a game on today. You know, it's good, clean, sober fun, right? Mm-hmm. Watching, hopefully, I mean, watching football on. So, I wanted to ask you about coexisting conditions because, you know, I've been in recovery for a long time, and I think I know that my first exposure to Heartview was 1981, and you know, usually you were Heartview was treating the alcoholism or the addiction. Nowadays, patients are presenting, is the word we use, with more disorders, with more mental health challenges. What are is that what you find?
And oh, absolutely.
That's why you're on board.
Absolutely.
What are you seeing?
Prior to coming to Heartview, we really didn't put a whole lot of emphasis on that mental health piece. It, of course, was there. But like you said, for years and years, the primary focus of Heartview and continues to be treating addiction. But along the way, it has evolved, and we're starting to see that, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? We don't know. The person's coping with depression by using a substance, or are they becoming depressed because they've used a substance? You know, we don't know the answer to that. But like you said, we're very much cognizant now of how important it is to treat both. In the past, I think it's been more, we focus on the addiction, we get the person sober, then we can treat whatever the other condition is, or we can refer that out. But we're finding, I think, that just the more patients we're seeing are just coming in with much more difficult, more complex issues, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, personality disorders, trauma. Trauma is a huge one. They have a history of trauma.
PTSD.
Yeah.
I think the term I've heard used sometimes is that our patients, by and large, are presenting with greater acuity. That's one of those fancy words, but we do have to be aware of all the things that might be going on there. And tell us about the HEART program at Heartview, and I know that's an acronym, and the HEART. What does that stand for?
HEART, HEART, stands for Helping Everyone Achieve Recovery Today. It's a family group that was founded several years before I came to Heartview by a dad or some parents that were struggling with their children who were addicted, and they needed support. And so they got together, and through a grant, they were able to develop this group that has just grown and evolved and changed over the years to now we hold it once a week, myself and another, a parent typically of his son had gone through treatment and is doing very well now, So the people that come, the families that come, it's they have the professional there that works at Heartview, and then they have the person that isn't necessarily employed by Heartview but has the experience and can share the experience that they're going through.
Yeah.
It's held Monday nights from 6 o'clock till typically 8:30, but we like to say that we're there until we need to be, or until the last person's gone. So it's a great program. Typically from 6 to 7, we'll always have we'll have some kind of education on addiction. And that's what really sets HEART apart from an Al-Anon or another recovery-based or group, support group.
Sure.
We always want to include that piece where it's a speaker, a video, a worksheet, some kind of education to help them understand this is what you're dealing with. And then the second hour and beyond is always support. It's an open forum. It's open for the only requirement, I guess, is anybody in your life that is struggling with addiction and you're hurting because of it.
And who comes typically?
Mm-hmm.
Who comes?
We have a lot of folks that are family members of current HeartView patients.
Moms and dads.
Past HeartView patients, yeah. Mm-hmm. Moms, dads, sisters, brothers, aunts.
Spouses.
Grandmas, yep. It doesn't necessarily matter. Best friends, employers. It doesn't have to be a blood relative. We've had folks that their person won't go into treatment, but they're struggling at home. And you know, what do I do? I need support. We've had folks come to Heart that their loved one went to treatment in another state and they just needed support here because their loved one is off of treatment.
Yeah. What do they want to know? What are some of the main things that...
You know, it's different person to person. Yeah. Some I've had folks come and they come every single week and they never say a word. They maybe say they're introduce themselves, but they just listen. But I know obviously they're getting something because they're coming back. I have others that have come once and we never see them again. It's totally up to you. We don't do any kind of documentation or processing. It's just kind of a brief first name. You can even make up a name if you want.
Yeah. And confidentiality rules the day, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean,
Each person who comes to Heart signs a confidentiality statement, you know, binding them to that confidentiality.
And there's no, there's no rules. There's no, you don't have to talk, as I said, or you can share a lot. Yeah. A lot of people will go to that and another support group meeting.
What are family members or friends most frustrated about?
Trust. Trust is the biggest issue we hear. How do I ever trust again? How am I ever going to trust and love my loved one again? After all the lies, after all the hurt, how do we rebuild that?
You know, and you and I know, we all know, fixers, you know, I could name some of them, but individuals that they want to fix their loved one. And, you know, whether that's their spouse or their son or their daughter. And so what do you say to them, for example? You know, they've tried to fix things and it's not working. So what's the advice you have for them, these fixers?
We have something we call the three C's of addiction. You didn't cause this. You can't cure it. You cannot control it. So if you're a fixer, you're not going to be able to fix this because you can't cure this.
Yeah.
So that's hard. It's a hard thing, especially when we're dealing with parents, because that's our job. We're supposed to fix things for our children. But this isn't something that the person themselves can fix even.
Yeah.
It's something that it's a disease.
Yeah. Well, I knew it would go fast. We're almost at the end of, is there anything that you're surprised I didn't ask you about or anything that you wanted to mention for sure?
I think I just want to get out the word about Heart on Monday nights and that it isn't just for HeartView alumni or employees or folks that have someone at HeartView. It's open to anyone. And if you need support, if you are struggling, if you're worried about someone, give us a call. We're always willing to answer questions. Shoot us an email via our our website, or just show up on Monday.
Yeah. And if you think you have an addiction, you can come to Heart. And again, it's confidential. You can make up a name. You don't have to talk. You can be there to listen. So
it's a powerful night. It really is.
It is. I've been there a couple few times now. Well, our guest was Crystal Asfick, a mental health counselor and family counselor at HeartView Foundation. So we thank you for coming. We usually close this program with the Serenity Prayer. Is that okay?
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that.
Well, let's do that together. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you.